Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 13 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District's Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 27th of March 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Alison and Andrew. And in the news this week, the Borough Council is going, the computerised payphones are coming, and sharing a bath of beans with a friend. In Grapevine Extra this week, we look at Rose and Expressions, plus we have the Vision Norfolk events for April. But first, a special message. We're sure that all listeners will be sad to hear that Dusty Miller, a stalwart of our reading teams for some four decades, is currently in the James Paget Hospital recovering from heart problems. We're sure that our listeners will join us all at Grapevine in sending our very best wishes for a speedy recovery, Dusty. And we look forward to welcoming you back to the microphone very, very soon. Another hello, this time for a birthday, as we wish listener Marjorie Barton a really great day tomorrow, Saturday the 28th. All the very best, Marjorie. Okay, it's time for the first part of the news, so over to Andrew and Alison.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of Grapevine. A major new task force in Great Yarmouth aims to clamp down on antisocial behaviour and clean up the town centre. This week saw the launch of a new 10-strong team, which will focus on tackling yobbish behaviour, resolving issues with nuisance properties and keeping the streets tidy in the town centre. It comes after Great Yarmouth Borough Council has secured government funding via the Pride in Place programme for the initiative, in which £20 million will be invested in the borough over the next decade. Councillor Paul Wells, Cabinet Member for Environment and Sustainability, Licensing and Waste, said, "Residents have made it crystal clear that improving the look and the feel of the town, dealing with antisocial behaviour so people feel safe, and that there is a welcoming environment is vitally important. The new task force will ensure enforcement is stepped up and there's a more targeted focus on street cleaning, fly tipping and run-down buildings. This new initiative sends out a strong message. If you come to Great Yarmouth, behave antisocially and intimidate others, you will face the full force of the laws at our disposal. The public won't tolerate their town being spoilt by a small number of people." The task force comprises four new council enforcement officers, three more police officers and three additional cleansing operatives, all of whom will aim to tackle antisocial behaviour and keep the streets clean. The new teams will also support police resources and council services to deal with waste management, the street scene and poorly managed and empty properties. Inspector Andy Tomlinson, Norfolk Police Inspector for Great Yarmouth and Galston, said, "This new task force gives us the dedicated resources we need to focus directly on the issues residents are most concerned about. By working side by side with our council partners, we can respond more quickly, use our enforcement powers more effectively, and support people in need. Our aim is clear: to make Great Yarmouth a safer, more welcoming place for everyone who lives, works, and visits here. In the town centre, the Rose, and behind the seafront, the task force will work with the council's environmental rangers to tackle problems on a street-by-street basis, educate residents and businesses, and use enforcement powers to ensure people committing offences are held accountable. The council says empty or unkempt properties attract antisocial behaviour and can facilitate organised crime, enabling things like cannabis factories to take root. It wants to do more to combat this, along with tackling misuse of bins in the town centre and prosecuting those responsible for fly-tipping offences. The new team aims to permanently change behaviour, increase people's pride in the town, ensure it is seen as a safe place to visit, and continue to make it an attractive and prosperous place to live, work and visit. Councillor Wells said, "Over the last 18 months, the council has targeted its work to better focus on what we know matters to people. We have reshaped the way we approach grounds maintenance and street cleaning. We have seen improvements in grass cutting, maintenance, emptying of bins and litter picking. Hotspot campaigns in Cobham, the Barrack Estate and Churchill Passages have reduced fly tipping and increased recycling rates. But there is still much to do. For instance, overflowing bins in the town are targeted by gulls and litter is picked up in the wind. And there is still visible on-street drinking by a small, hardcore group of people. We're determined to do all we can to tackle issues which blight our community. We want everyone to have pride in Great Yarmouth and make sure it is the welcoming place our residents deserve."
Meanwhile, Norfolk's 8 councils are to be scrapped and replaced with 3 new super authorities, covering the east and west of the county, along with one for Greater Norwich. After months of speculation, the government confirmed today that it has plumped for the creation of 3 new unitary councils, in the biggest shake-up of Norfolk's councils in more than 50 years. It will mean the abolition of Norfolk County Council, Norwich City Council, South Norfolk Council, Broadland District Council, Breckland District Council, North Norfolk Council, Great Yarmouth Borough Council and West Norfolk Council. The new councils will be unitary authorities, meaning they provide all the services in the area they cover. This is unlike the current setup where some services, such as roads, adult social care and children's services, are the responsibility of County Hall, while the district, borough and city handle others such as recycling, environmental health and planning. The government had invited authorities to suggest what should happen in the shake-up. The 3 council model was supported by 6 councils: Norwich, Broadland, Breckland, North Norfolk, Great Yarmouth and West Norfolk, which branded its bid the Future Norfolk Proposals. The Future Norfolk submission had included a Greater Norwich on extended boundaries, which would take in parts of South Norfolk and Broadland. The Future Norfolk East Council takes in areas such as Great Yarmouth, but also places such as Wyndham, Cromer, Sheringham, Fakenham, and even Wells next the sea. The West Council, put forward by Future Norfolk, takes in towns such as King's Lynn, Dereham, Swaffham, Thetford, Downham Market, Hunstanton and Wotton. Mike Stonard, Labour leader of Norwich City Council, said, "This is a momentous day for our city and the best decision possible for Norwich, for Norfolk and for everyone who lives, works and seeks to thrive in our county." Given the last time we underwent local government reorganisation in our region was some 50 years ago, this presents us with a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape local services to meet modern-day demands and, of course, recognise the role of our cities as economic and cultural capitals that drive growth. Our case for a Greater Norwich City Council as part of the 3 unitary councils for Norfolk was strong, and it clearly resonated with the government, who have today given the go-ahead for us to proceed with its delivery. The 3 unitary model acknowledges Norwich's status as a major regional city and also ensures that other areas, including North Norfolk, the Broads, the Brecks and the Fens, retain their identities and characteristics. Norfolk County Council had wanted a single unitary council for the entire county, while South Norfolk Council had proposed 2. Kay Mason Billick, the Conservative leader of Norfolk County Council, said, "I was briefed this morning by the Minister, Alistair McGovern, confirming the government's decision that it is minded to support 3 new councils for Norfolk. We await the details of the rationale behind this decision and will carefully consider this against the criteria the government sets out for reorganisation. We must examine what this decision means for our residents, partners and services. We are clear that the government must ensure that the full costs of reorganisation are met and that implementation arrangements are robust, realistic and fully deliverable. It is not acceptable to push these costs onto local councils and taxpayers, and our priority remains safeguarding frontline services and ensuring continuity." But Steve Morphew, leader of County Hall's Labour Group, said, "This is incredibly good news for the people of Norfolk. Our Labour government has given us a once-in-a-generation opportunity. Replacing two-tier councils with single councils brings functions together to be more accessible, better value for money, and closer to the communities they serve. It's an historic day and time to get to work on making the future right. Arrangements for the new councils, including the number of councillors they will have, will now need to be drawn up and receive formal parliamentary approval, a process the government has indicated is likely to take 6 to 9 months. Elections for the new unitary councils will take place in May 2027, and the new councils will be set up in shadow form before they formally replace the current 8 councils in 2028. During the transition period, existing councils would continue to deliver services while getting ready to transfer assets, functions and staff. The shadow unitary authorities would develop implementation plans to include council tax harmonisation and a switch in services. And the government is aiming for the new authorities to go live on April the 1st, 2028. A big day that's going to be.
There will be more A47 closures next week as a £100 million road building scheme continues. Since 2023, National Highways has been dualling the major road between Blowfield and North Burlingham. Last week, traffic was moved onto the new 2.6-mile stretch of carriageway, and the new B1140 westbound exit and entry slip roads are also now in use. A National Highways spokeswoman said they are on track to open all lanes and move to a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit this summer. Between now and then, the final stages will be completed. They will involve creating two new junctions, converting the old A47 for local use and installing new cycle paths. The next closures will be between the Cucumber Lane roundabout at Brundle and the Acle roundabout, between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. on March the 30th and 31st. During this time, more permanent signs will be installed. It will also be closed on April the 13th and 14th to allow roadworks to move from the eastbound to the westbound carriageway between the B1140 Acle Road and the Windle. There are to be more overnight closures in the week beginning April the 27th for work on the central reservation.
A man has been remanded over allegations that he's involved in cocaine dealing in Great Yarmouth. Sonny Wilson faces charges of possession with intent to supply the Class A drug and being concerned in its supply between January and March the 17th. The 22-year-old of Charlotte Close in Caister was arrested at Coronation Terrace in Great Yarmouth. Norwich Magistrates Court was told he had been found with a phone that was said to contain messages indicative of his involvement in drug dealing. His name and details of cocaine deals had allegedly previously also been found on another phone seized in February as part of a police investigation into drugs gangs in the town, said prosecutors. The court was told he was accused of having, quote, a significant role, and that if found guilty he faced a possible jail sentence of up to 5 years. His case was committed to Norwich Crown Court with an initial hearing on April the 16th. Annette Hall, defending, applied for bail, stating he was likely to deny the charges and arguing that he had vulnerabilities. However, he was remanded to prison after prosecutors objected due to the nature and seriousness of the allegations.
A woman has been banned from keeping pets after her dog was found with a fractured leg and other non-accidental injuries. Alison Wynne from Hopton appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court following an RSPCA investigation. She was found guilty of causing unnecessary suffering to a dog and was convicted under the Animal Welfare Act. The case came to light on July the 24th when Wynne's 6-year-old Jack Russell Terrier, Jack, was taken to a vet's in Mildenhall with a fractured back leg. A vet told the court the injury was consistent with severe blunt force trauma. Additional injuries, including head trauma and abdominal bruising, raised further concerns. Veterinary staff found suspected non-accidental injuries that dated back to February of the same year. RSPCA Animal Rescue Officer David Allen described Jack as having a visible leg injury, a discoloured eye and signs of bruising. RSPCA Inspector Dean Astelberry visited Wynne's previous home in Lakenheath and found the garden secure with no hazards present that could have caused such injuries accidentally. The dog was removed under the Animal Welfare Act and taken to RSPCA Finsbury Park Animal Hospital for treatment. The court was told Wynne had shown remorse and suffers from mental health issues and learning difficulties. On March the 11th, she was sentenced to 12 weeks in prison, suspended for 24 months. She was also slapped with a lifelong ban on keeping animals, which she cannot appeal for 10 years. Inspector Astleberry said, "This was a concerning case involving a dog who had suffered multiple injuries over a period of time. Thanks to the actions of veterinary staff and attending officers, Jack was removed from harm and received the care he needed. Anyone who is struggling to care for their pet should seek help at the earliest opportunity. There are charities and organisations that can provide support and advice before situations escalate."
Great Yarmouth Borough Council is appealing for information after mattresses and hefty home appliances were dumped near a Norfolk village. GYBC is investigating after mattresses, fridge freezers, a dishwasher and a washing machine were fly-tipped off Philby Lane near Ormsby St Margaret at the weekend. The items were found off the road close to the junction with the main A149. A Facebook post from GYBC Rangers and Recycling said, "Thank you to those who have reported these items dumped off Philby Lane over the weekend. If you have any information to help this investigation, please get in touch." It comes after the council also wants to identify the driver who dumped several tins of paint and other rubbish in Great Yarmouth. A silver Ford Fiesta was seen fly-tipping rubbish at Yarmouth Business Park on Mother's Day, March the 15th.
Officials have warned a proposed estate of more than 500 houses would push a town's services past breaking point. The warning about the impact of the Galston development was issued over demands that the applicant needs to cough up more than £1.6 million for schools and health facilities. NHS and education bosses say the scheme, off Links Road in Galston, would bring almost 1,000 extra residents, dozens of school-aged children and a spike in 999 calls. In new documents, Norfolk County Council says it would have serious concerns if funding cannot be found to meet the necessary infrastructure triggered by the 516 home scheme. The money includes almost £1 million towards a new primary school, special educational needs places, and bolstering the town's library. Health chiefs are separately demanding more than £600,000 for a permanent GP and community health hub at Shrublands, and to upgrade ambulance facilities. They say that local surgeries, hospitals and 999 services are already operating beyond safe capacity. Between them, county education officers and NHS Norfolk and Waveney estimate the estate will bring almost 1,000 extra residents, 174 school-aged children and around 229 additional emergency calls a year, a 7.2% jump in 999 incidents in the area. They warn that unless the full package of developer contributions is secured, the project would worsen a looming shortage of primary school and SEND places and place unsustainable pressure on already stretched health services. Norfolk County Council's company, Repton Property Developments, wants to build the properties, which include a 70-home extra care facility, in conjunction with Lovell Homes. The scheme has already proved controversial with people living nearby. Bradwell Parish Council has objected to the plans, stating the impact on the village is significant. Other objectors have called the plans absolutely ridiculous and said there isn't the infrastructure to cater for so many residents. Councillors are expected to decide on the proposals in May.
A woman from Norfolk is stranded in Thailand after breaking her back in three places in a horse riding accident. It happened while Joanna Ingram, aged 57, from Belton, was enjoying some winter sun in Thailand with her husband Stuart, also 57, last month. Towards the end of the two-week trip, the receptionist fell off a pony on a beach in Krabi. "One minute I was on the back of the horse, the next I was lying on my back on the ground," she said. "I've got no recollection of how I got there. Doctors said I'd broken my back in three places. I was devastated. Stuart and I were both terrified. We didn't know if I'd be able to walk or move again or if we'd be able to get home. Thankfully, after undergoing emergency surgery, she's now able to move and is on the road to recovery. But her travel insurance provider, a firm called Journey, that's J-O-U-R-N-Y, refuses to cover her medical costs. The company has classified horse riding as a high-risk activity, and Mrs. Ingram said she was unaware it was excluded from her policy. "We've had to fund all of the medical treatment ourselves," she said. "It's cost over £30,000 so far, and it's climbing every day. It's really scary. Every day I'm in hospital, there's another £2,000 added to the bill." The couple are hoping to return to the UK within the next 2 days, but expect the journey to cost another £10,000. They will also need to pay around £2,000 for a private ambulance once back in the country, as Mrs. Ingram is unable to travel in a regular car. A GoFundMe page has been launched to help raise the funds. It currently sits at around £11,500, and Mrs. Ingram said she can't express how grateful she is to everyone who's donated so far. The Mercury contacted Journey for comment, but so far have had no reply.
A 91-year-old woman who suffered a series of falls and declining health in her final months died after going more than a week without food, a court has heard. Marie Powley of St. Robert's Way in Belton passed away at her home in February after being placed on palliative care. In a statement made to an officer at Norfolk Coroner's Court, her daughter-in-law, Jane Powley, described a marked deterioration in Mrs. Powley's condition following the death of her husband, Patrick. After this, she became increasingly fragile and started to experience falls. She had several falls at home, she said. In November alone, Mrs. Powley, a retired shop owner who had been born in Yarmouth, suffered four falls within a two-week period, leading to multiple hospital admissions to the James Paget Hospital in Galston. On November the 14th, while in bed at home, she began hallucinating and thought there were people in her house. She believed there were people there and attempted to fight them off, Jane said. This caused her to fall from her bed and hit a chest of drawers. Carers called for an ambulance and she was taken to the James Paget Hospital, where she remained for several days. Following her discharge, Mrs. Powley became bedbound. Her family told the inquest they were never given a clear explanation for this change, and to this day have no idea why the decision to keep her in bed was made. She was also placed on palliative care. She kept asking to get out of bed and sit in the chair, Jane added. Speaking after the hearing, she added that while the family accepted the decision at the time, they would be raising their concerns with the clinicians involved in Mrs. Powley's care. The court also heard that Mrs. Powley had previously suffered a serious fall in April 2024, breaking her neck in the kitchen, leaving her requiring a neck brace. Mrs. Powley's health continued to decline in the months leading up to her death. Before her death on the 8th of February, she had gone 11 days without food and 9 days without water. Area coroner Yvonne Blake recorded a conclusion of natural causes.
A live bullet encrusted in rock has been found by a Coast Guard team on the beach. HM Coast Guard Galston discovered a bullet encased in rock, shells and mineral deposits on the beach in Yarmouth. After finding it, the beach area to the south of the town was cordoned off before a team came to dispose of it. A Facebook post from HM Coast Guard Galston said, "We were alerted to suspected ordnance on the beach at Great Yarmouth. The team cordoned the area, gently persuaded a curious seal to move further down the beach and waited for the explosive ordnance disposal team. On their arrival, the item was identified as a live 50 calibre bullet. The Coast Guard team said the bullet was difficult to spot as it was encrusted with rock, shells and mineral deposits from the beach, but it still had the potential to harm and needed to be dealt with. The incident happened on Sunday.
Norfolk and Waveney Mind has confirmed that new sessions and support groups are now available following the closure of Lowestoft-based Access Community Trust, or ACT, a month ago. The trust ceased trading on February the 25th, with 96 staff losing their jobs on payday, while numerous services had been badly affected. This included the Steamhouse cafes in Galston and King's Lynn, which provided important local mental health support. Now, Norfolk and Waveney's leading mental health support charity is reassuring the community that you are not alone and support remains available. A Norfolk and Waveney Mind spokesman said, "In response to the sudden closure and the gaps it has created, we have moved quickly to put additional mental health support in place across the region. ensuring that help is still accessible to those who need it. In recent days, this has seen senior members of the MIND team meeting and speaking directly with people affected in East Norfolk and Waveney. The spokesman added, "We know that co-production is vital, and these conversations are helping us understand what the community needs now and in the longer term. This insight will directly shape how we design and deliver our services, ensuring we can do the very best for local people." Norfolk and Waveney Mind has established a full programme of support groups and pop-up mental health drop-ins across Great Yarmouth, Galston and Lowestoft. These sessions, with timetables, provide on-the-day wellbeing support, information and signposting for anyone affected or feeling uncertain following ACT's closure. Norfolk and Waveney Mind is also working closely with the Norfolk and Suffolk Integrated Care Board to relocate its REST hub, that's R-E-S-T, capitals hub, to the former Galston Steam Cafe site in early May. To access any Norfolk and Waveney Mind services, call 0300 330 5488 or visit www.norfolkandwaveneymind.org.uk.
East Coast College is set to enhance its training facilities for civil engineering and construction after receiving a welcome funding boost. The college will establish the Lounge Civil Campus, a dynamic training hub in collaboration with regional employers for new entrants, career changes and existing workers looking to upskill. The campus, based at Lounge near Lowestoft, opened its doors for the first time on July the 5th, 2023. As East Coast College unveiled the Civil Engineering and Construction Campus. Now the College and Suffolk New College have been successful with bids to the Asset Skills Enhancement and Capability, the ASEC Fund, and a £7.8 million pot provided by Sizewell C, with its projects supported by East Suffolk Council and Suffolk County Council. With the funds aimed to enhance the supply of skills related to the Sizewell C power station construction, regional needs and aspirations, it will see the local skills provision, such as apprenticeships, expanded and developed. Richard Smith, Suffolk County Council's deputy leader, said, "This funding is enabling long-term development of local skills in Suffolk. This will train and educate students to support the Sizewell C project, but will also have a significant and lasting benefit for the county's civil engineering." East Suffolk Council leader Caroline Topping said, "This funding will help improve skills and is about enabling our communities to thrive, both now and in the future." Paul Padder, Principal and Chief Executive at East Coast College, said, "We're delighted and grateful to have collaborated with Sizewell C, East Suffolk Council and Suffolk County Council to secure funding for the further development of our civil engineering campus in Lound. The resulting enhanced curriculum will create outstanding opportunities for people in our communities to gain new skills and progress into well-paid long-term careers, supporting economic growth and prosperity for generations to come." Suffolk New College will expand its offer with more high-quality training and education in groundworks, civil engineering, technical higher educational skills needs and driver training. Chris Young, head of Sizewell C's Employment Affairs Unit, said, "We're delighted to be able to provide this important funding to both colleges."
Students were given a behind-the-scenes look at the early stages of a new housing development. Year 9 pupils from Caister Academy visited Persimmon Homes' Mulberry Park developments in Caister, where they explored the construction process and ongoing archaeological investigations. The visit included a tour of excavated trenches, some containing prehistoric field systems and some near wartime gun emplacements. Peter Crawley, senior project manager, said, "This phase built upon what had been seen previously, with evidence for prehistoric field systems, although this phase was located further to the north and did not uncover many Roman features. Following the end of the fieldwork, our team undertook a talk for approximately 30 Year 9 students from the Caister Academy about the findings from the site, from the current and previous phases of work, and archaeology in general. The talk was also extended to the nearby brick and concrete gun emplacement used in World War II. The students also learned about the house building process, from planning and technical design through to construction. A spokesman for Persimmon Homes Anglia said, "We're always keen to engage with local schools."
And long-delayed work to build more than 22 new homes at a former school site has finally got underway. Norfolk County Council's housing company, Repton Homes, has begun the construction of new houses at the former school site at Lingwood, which is between Acle and Brundle. The council secured permission for 22 homes at the former site of Lingwood First School site in Chapel Road back in 2019, 5 years after the school had closed. But due to a directive by Government Advisers Natural England regarding the impact of new housing on nutrient pollution in the Broads and the River Wensum, plans for the Grade 2 listed 19th century buildings could not be approved until 2024. Jane James, Cabinet Member for Corporate Services and Innovation at Conservative-controlled County Hall, welcomed the start of the work at the former school. She said these schemes clearly demonstrated how Repton is continuing to deliver high-quality new homes for Norfolk while generating a financial return for the council. By bringing forward developments on sites we know well, we're able to combine local insight with the expertise of our partners to ensure these projects work for our communities.
Well, more full-size local stories in just a while. First, though, we have some news in brief.
A delightful afternoon tea is set to take place in Great Yarmouth. The Lions Club will host the event at Newtown Methodist Church on Saturday, April the 25th, between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. Senior residents are invited to enjoy delicious refreshments and great company. Those who attend can also enjoy live entertainment from singer Carla Beer. Tickets are free, but booking is required by calling 07411 441096. Great Yarmouth Lions said, "We look forward to seeing you there." A man has been arrested on suspicion of stealing two cars, including a Range Rover, and having drugs. Norfolk police said the man, aged in his 20s, was detained on suspicion of the theft of two motor vehicles, possession of cannabis, and dangerous driving. Other suspected offences, including failing to stop when directed, driving without insurance, driving otherwise in accordance with a licence, and handling stolen goods. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning and subsequently released on bail until June the 11th while inquiries continue. A person has been arrested following police patrols in Great Yarmouth over the weekend. Specialist drug dogs brought in from Thames Valley Police were sent out across the town with stop and searches carried out based on suspicious behaviour. One person was arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary also confirmed that Class A drugs were seized as a result of the patrols. A man has been charged after scammers pretending to be police officers targeted people in Norfolk. Several people living in Ormsby, Scrapby and Hemsby were targeted by courier fraudsters between March the 14th and 16th. The scammers, who were pretending to be police officers over the phone, called the villagers and asked them for their bank information. A man in his 30s was arrested on March the 18th in Hemel Hempstead, Hertfordshire, and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. Craig Matchin, aged 30, of Hilldyke Road, St Albans, has since been charged with 6 counts of fraud by false representation. He appeared in Norwich Magistrates Court on March the 20th and is next due to appear for a plea and trial preparation hearing on April the 17th.
A probe is continuing more than a month after more than £10,000 worth of vape products were stolen from a Norfolk shop. The investigation has seen police release CCTV images of two men they would like to speak to in connection with the theft which happened at a store in the High Street, Goulston. The doors of the shop were forced open between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. on February the 8th. As well as vape products, £200 in cash was also taken in the raid. Police believe three men were involved in the incident, and a force spokesman said investigations are ongoing. And a teenage boy was punched and robbed of his electric scooter in Yarmouth. The robbery happened at 7:30 p.m. last Thursday on Fuller's Hill. A man in his 20s approached the teenager, punched him and stole the e-scooter. The boy suffered facial injuries and was taken to hospital for checks. Anybody who has any information or may have witnessed the attack is advised to contact Norfolk Constabulary on its website or by calling 101. In an event we'll see the George Harrison Project coming to St George's Theatre. On stage, the project will revisit some of Harrison's most loved songs from his multifaceted career, showcasing hits from his time with the Beatles, as a solo artist, and as a member of the Travelling Wilburys. This Saturday, March the 28th, the audience can expect to be taken on a nostalgic musical journey with classics such as Here Comes the Sun, My Sweet Lord, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and many more. Harrison, who is known as the quiet one in the Beatles, was a musical genius in his own right, contributing to more than 600 million records sold worldwide during his time with the iconic band. He furthered his career after the Beatles, proving his independent skill and creativity in the music industry. And for more information or to book these tickets, visit stgeorgestheatre.com or call 01493 331 484.
Well, back to the full fat version of the news, with a reminder that Grapevine Extra this week features the Vision Norfolk April events, plus Alison on the Rose and Andrew on some well-used expressions.
A specially trained dog has been praised for helping police find evidence to jail an arsonist. Fire investigation dog Fizz and watch manager Graham Curry from Essex County Fire and Rescue Service were commended by a Crown Court judge after assisting in an arson investigation. The blaze swept through Ladybird Guest House in Great Yarmouth in July of last year. Adam Wilson, aged 40, of Wellesley Road, Great Yarmouth, received a 7-year sentence in January, made up of 4.5 years in custody and 2.5 years on licence. He previously admitted arson, being reckless as to whether life was endangered. Judge Anthony Bate, sitting at Norwich Crown Court, awarded a certificate of commendation to Fizz and Mr Curry for their contributions to the investigation. Chief Fire Officer and Chief Executive Rick Hilton said, "Fizz and Graham are great assets to our service. This incident has shown that without Fizz, a conviction might not have been possible." Fizz, an 8-year-old Sprocker Spaniel, identified areas of interest that helped investigators narrow down the point of origin. As debris was carefully removed, she returned to the building 6 times, each time identifying things that helped investigators narrow down the point of origin. "I'm incredibly proud of Fizz," Mr. Curry added. "The environments we work in are challenging, but she stays completely focused on what she's there to do. In this case, she kept returning to the same area and giving us consistent indications, which gave us real confidence in where the fire had started." The court's commendation highlighted how Fizz speedily and accurately identified 3 areas of interest on each occasion, enabling investigators to confirm the origin of the fire.
Great Yarmouth could get 3 new communication kiosks with payphones, touchscreens and defibrillators. NWP Street Limited have applied for planning permission to install 3 communication kiosks and also gain advertising consent in the town. The company has applied to build the kiosks at 3 sites, on North Quay, outside No. 3 Marketplace and outside 113 Regent Road. It says the need for public payphones is great and states 2.68 million people in the UK do not own a mobile phone. The proposed kiosk would deliver a range of services, including providing the ability to make calls and wayfinding via a touchscreen. They would also have digital advertising and be fitted with defibrillators, which will be registered on the National Defibrillator Network, with their location known to ambulance services. Each kiosk would act as a multifunctional hub, offering touchscreen navigation and information to assist residents and visitors. They would provide free calls to emergency services and charities, with the aim of supporting community safety and well-being. Secure payment options via debit, credit and contactless methods would be provided. The company says the design would reflect the traditional British telephone kiosk and have an open plan layout to make it accessible to all users. Internal lighting would be provided to illuminate the kiosk at night, with an overhead canopy and glazed side panels designed to offer protection from the elements. The touchscreen would provide a local area map, information and contact details for points of interest. It would also contain an emergency contact directory, providing access to police, fire and ambulance emergency numbers and support services including the Samaritans, Childline, Rape Crisis Centre and international embassy contacts. Weekly inspections, scheduled cleaning and ongoing upkeep are proposed to maintain the kiosks and prevent misuse. A decision on the planning applications for the three kiosks and associated advertising consent is expected by April the 30th. That sounds very interesting.
Yes, yes. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has added new lighting to the town's marketplace. Lights have been installed on the covered market, on the benches in the piazza end behind the market, and on the trees surrounding the marketplace. A Facebook post from GYBC said, "We're delighted to share that new lighting has been installed in the marketplace. The space now feels warmer, safer and more inviting. Whether you're visiting the market, attending an event or just passing through, the new lighting helps showcase the marketplace at its very best. This is another step in creating a vibrant town centre that people can enjoy day and night." It comes after the Borough Council completed its £5.8 million regeneration project in the town in August, when the piazza area behind the market gained new paving, lighting, trees and seating. Work on the marketplace first began in June 2024, with new paving, benches, lighting and planters installed. The project on the piazza area then started after more than £5 million was spent on building the covered market.
Great Yarmouth Primary Academy and Nursery has been rated as highly inclusive in its first feedback from an inspection under Ofsted's new report card framework. The report highlighted two areas of inclusion and personal development and well-being to be of, quote, a strong standard, and the report said this is a highly inclusive school. The school fully includes pupils with special educational needs and or disabilities in every aspect of school life. Pupils are proud to attend Great Yarmouth Primary Academy. The inspection report carried out on 20th of January found achievement, attendance, behaviour, curriculum and teaching, early years and leadership and governance areas all to be of expected standard. The primary school, which provides education for children aged 4 to 11, also met the required safeguarding standards. The new inspection framework, which has been in use since November 2025, uses a 5-point scale to grade schools across several areas from exceptional, which is the highest grade, to urgent improvement, the lowest grade. There were no areas in the report which were listed as needing attention or requiring urgent improvement. Overall absence in the school across pupils in the year 2024-25 was 7.1%, which is above the national average of 5.2%. However, the report stated that leaders have taken effective steps to address this, which are having a positive impact on pupils' attendance. Gary Russon, the principal at Great Yarmouth Primary Academy, said, "I'm rightfully proud of the work we do, creating an environment where our pupils feel safe and nurtured." The Ofsted inspection reinforces the fact that we are providing a space where pupils in our care can and will succeed. It spurs us on to look ahead to the future and continue to improve our provision and practice in service of our community.
A town centre shop has been forbidden from selling single cans of beer and cider amid fears over street drinking and antisocial behaviour. Ganagini Kesavan, who runs Thompson's News Stores on St Peter's Road in Great Yarmouth, applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to remove a condition from the premises licence that stated that no single cans or bottles of beer, cider or spirit mixtures can be sold at the premises. The application was accepted in part in that controls over the sale of spirit mixers were removed, but the council's licensing subcommittee rejected part of the application and modified the conditions of the licence, which now states no single cans or bottles of beer or cider, normally only available in packs, shall be sold from these premises. The application had sparked a backlash from police and local council officials, who raised significant concerns regarding crime and disorder associated with street drinking in the area. Police said that St Peter's Road has experienced ongoing issues linked to street drinking and associated antisocial behaviour. They warned the availability of single can alcohol sales would significantly increase the likelihood of individuals relocating and congregating on St Peter's Road. A council official said that single cans were an enabling factor for those involved in alcohol-related antisocial behaviour. The decision followed the launch of a new policy aimed at tackling alcohol-associated crime in an area which includes St Peter's Road. The new Cumulative Impact Assessment, or CIA, will make it harder to open pubs, bars and off-licences in the area that approximately covers Nelson Ward. It means any new premises licence application, or a bid to vary an existing one, will face a presumption of refusal unless the applicant can demonstrate that they will not add to problems already linked to the concentration of licensed premises.
And staying on that theme, two men have been arrested after a theft which saw armed officers and trained negotiators deployed. Police were called just after 7:30 a.m. on Sunday, following a report that two men had stolen a crate of beer from a shop in Salisbury Road and left the scene. Officers were then deployed to Chaucer Road in the town, following reports that one of the men had been spotted in the garden of a property in the street. When the police arrived at the Chaucer Road address, the man threw objects at officers and refused to leave the property. A second man at the property claimed there were knives inside the address and also refused to leave. Both men now refusing to lead led to the deployment of specialist units, including armed officers and trained negotiators. And during the incident, the property on Chaucer Road was closed off as a precautionary measure. A man aged in his 20s was arrested at the property on suspicion of theft shortly after 11 a.m. A second man, aged in his 30s, was arrested on suspicion of theft and for being wanted on recall to prison. Both were taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and remain in custody.
A prison worker fell asleep while he was supposed to be carrying out regular safety checks on a vulnerable prisoner who hanged himself in his cell. James Smith was found to have tried to cover up his negligence by creating fake records of checks on the prisoner he never actually made. Norwich Crown Court heard the 44-year-old had been working a night shift at Norwich Prison as an operational support grade, or prison support worker, who had been responsible for carrying out hourly checks on vulnerable inmates at risk from suicide. Of those Smith had been responsible for checking was Alastair McKenzie, a diagnosed schizophrenic who had not been taking his medication and who had recently attempted self-harm. Duncan Atkinson, prosecuting, said it had been agreed that McKenzie, who was in prison, having been jailed after he admitted an arson offence in August 2019, should be observed twice an hour, day and night. During his shift in October 2021, Smith had been responsible for carrying out checks on the at-risk prisoner, as well as others. But Mr. Atkinson said Smith failed to carry out appropriate checks between 9:30 p.m. on October the 14th and 6:40 a.m. the following day. The officer was supposed to have carried out a total of 19 checks on McKenzie, but had just done two of them. Smith had also missed 15 other checks on another 8 vulnerable inmates. The court heard cameras near to McKenzie's cell showed Smith had not carried out the checks when he said he had, or was supposed to. Smith had told colleagues he had fallen asleep. The defendant had completed the records, falsifying them, despite not having completed the requisite checks. Shortly after 9 a.m. on October the 15th, McKenzie was found hanging from a ligature in his cell. Paramedics were called, but McKenzie was declared dead. Smith, of Green Lane Bradwell, near Great Yarmouth, appeared at court earlier this month for sentencing. He had previously admitted charges of having willfully neglected to perform his duties as a public officer, in that he failed to conduct the observations. Judge Catherine Moore said, "This vulnerable prisoner was left alone by you for lengthy periods." She said, "In all, 8 vulnerable prisoners had been under his charge on that shift. But you let them down because you didn't check on them as often as you were instructed to," said Judge Moore. The judge said he then falsified records to cover up his failings. Imposing 14 months imprisonment, suspended for 14 months, Judge Moore said these were deliberate and repeated failings to carry out checks. Before Smith was sentenced, the court heard a statement from Mackenzie's sister, who described him as a kind, gentle and caring man. She said having discovered what she now knows about her brother's last hours and what had happened caused deep grief. Stephen Spence, KC, mitigating, said the defendant understands how serious his failings were. He said Smith had entered guilty pleas, which indicated his remorse for this one lapse in his 12 years of exemplary public service. Mr. Spence said his behaviour that night was completely out of character for Smith, a lone parent responsible for two children. Smith was also ordered to carry out 150 hours of unpaid work.
A man and a woman are due up in court this week after they admitted drugs offences. Harley Dos Santos, aged 20, and Nicola Pollard, 42, will be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on Friday the 27th for possession with intent to supply cocaine. It was after Dos Santos was arrested when police found drugs on him during a stop and search in Blackfriars Road, Yarmouth, on February the 9th. Searches were subsequently executed on an address in Camden Road in the town, where a large quantity of suspected Class A drugs, cash and mobile phones were discovered. Pollard was arrested on suspicion of possession with intent to supply a Class A drug and possession of a Class B drug. The pair, both from Camden Road, appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court last month after being arrested and charged.
The Maltsters pub in Ranworth has closed temporarily to undergo £350,000 of investment by a leading pub company, Punch Pubs & Co. The renovation work will see the creation of a new on-site fish and chip shop, overhaul of the kitchen and a revamped front patio. Mark Wilson, who has run the Maltsters since March 2024 with his partner, Amy, said, "We've had a very successful first 2 years here in Ranworth. And with the support and recent investment from Punch Pubs & Co., we look forward to implementing a winning recipe for years to come. The front patio will be decked with new furniture and a redesigned layout, which has been created with the help of renowned garden designer Gardening with Ish." A spokesman for Punch Pubs & Co. said, "Much of the investment will focus on behind-the-scenes upgrades, focusing on future-proofing the pub and setting it up for long-term success. The Maltsters will relaunch with a brand new menu featuring decadent pub classics, as well as the addition of an on-site fish and chip shop to replace the existing pizza shack. Although the temporary closure may disappoint regulars, the improvements promise to make their return all the sweeter. The new fish and chip shop is set to open on April the 14th.
Ormiston Venture Academy, part of Ormiston Academies Trust, held its annual Venture Elite Sports Award at the Wild Duck Holiday Park, honouring student achievement in sport. More than 110 students attended the event, which saw 26 awards presented, including Outstanding Commitment to Sport, Future Olympian, Venture Spirit Award and Leader of the Year. Brooke, who received the highest honour for outstanding commitment, was praised for her passion and consistent effort in sport. And Mrs. Willis, head of PE at the Galston School, said, "Sport plays a huge role in the culture of our academy, and it was fantastic to celebrate the commitment, determination and talent shown by our students this year. We're incredibly proud of all the award winners, and special congratulations to Brooke, who has consistently demonstrated the venture virtues through her 5 years in PE." Other major awards included the Future Olympian, the Venture Spirit Award and the Leader of the Year, highlighting many ways students contribute to the sporting life of the academy.
As a young boy growing up in the countryside, Stuart Thornton would always know when his father Mike was on his way home from work. The distinctive sound of a Triumph Tiger Daytona could easily be heard through their home village, signalling Mike's arrival long before he appeared on their driveway. "That sound was part of my childhood, and part of the village, really," said Stuart, who would go on to help restore the bike. "My dad took me to a prom, or what was then known as the school dance, on it, to everybody's amusement. It was something I really coveted and hoped that someday I would inherit." Tragically, that day came sooner than expected, when Mike was struck down with a short illness and died from mesothelioma. He contracted the disease after a lifetime working with asbestos. He was 73. At the time, Stuart and his father were in the process of restoring the 67 Triumph, which has been in the family since 1975. He said, "It's bittersweet, because you know that if you're going to inherit the bike, it's because your dad's gone. And he went ahead of time, basically as a result of an industrial accident. Once he got too ill, he signed it over to me at the end of 2016, and I said I'd finish it for him, for us." Stuart, who now lives in North Burlingham, near Acle, completed the rebuild in 2017 with the help of the Norfolk Motorcycle Museum in North Walsham and Oliver Barnes at Tri Supply. He now enjoys riding the Triumph around the country lanes of his adopted Norfolk home. "I think it's found its spiritual home, in a way, in the back roads of Norfolk," he added. "There are no demanding hills, nice little corners, and the speeds are not too high. You can just potter about." Speaking to BikeSure's blog, Forever Bikes, Stuart vowed to make sure his father's legacy lives on. "It's not leaving the family," he added. "My daughter's inheriting it. Whether she likes it or not, she's five."
And a lifelike Captain Jack Sparrow impersonator has been turning heads and fooling fans in Great Yarmouth. The buzz is all part of the Hippodrome's new Pirates Live show, which opens this Friday, March the 27th. The show features a cast that includes Stephen Pedgick, who made his debut at the Hippodrome for this Christmas as Ebenezer Scrooge. Now, billboards advertising the event have seen passers-by confusing the actor for the man himself, Johnny Depp. "Honestly, it's been crazy," Jack Jay, the producer of Pirates Live, said. "We've had multiple calls to the box office asking if it's the real actor coming along. While I can confirm it isn't Mr. Depp himself, this is as close as you can possibly get to the real thing, that's for sure." Stephen Pedgick has spent years perfecting a character based on the famous movie pirate, blending comedy and magic into his performance. Mr. Jay added, "However, if Johnny does fancy a go at joining our pirates, I'd be happy to give him an audition, but no promises." Pirates Live runs until April the 19th.
A pair of care home managers have sat in a bath of baked beans for charity. Danielle Bullant, manager of Eversley Lodge Nursing Home in Great Yarmouth, and deputy manager Demi Codling, worked from a bath full of baked beans on Friday to raise money for Comic Relief. Friends, colleagues and residents' families sponsored the pair, who quickly approached their target of raising £250. Miss Bullant said, "It's been an unusual work day, swapping my office chair for a bath of beans. I have always loved baked beans, but I'm not sure I will still want to eat them after this." She said the team at Eversley Lodge was always looking for ways to make work fun and bring the community together. The care home, located on North Dean's Road, has a busy calendar of upcoming events. On Friday, March the 27th, it will celebrate Wear a Hat Day with live music, a bake sale and a raffle from 2pm to 4:30pm. It will also host an Easter Fun Day for children on Sunday the 5th of April from 10am to 12pm.
Well, that's it for the news this week. So welcome to Grapevine Extra. Andrew and Alison with Rose and Expressions coming up after the April programme of events from Vision Norfolk. Well, it's certainly a busy month ahead for Vision Norfolk, so let's start with the coffee mornings. Great Yarmouth's weekly caffeine fixes are on Wednesdays from 10am until 12 noon, with this month's dates being the 1st, the 8th, and the 15th and 22nd, and also the 29th. The Ormsby's monthly coffee morning is on Thursday the 2nd from 10 until 12, with Caister percolating up on Tuesday the 7th and 21st at the same times. Back to Wednesday the 1st for yoga from 12:30 until 1:30, followed the next day, Thursday the 2nd, by the cribbage group from 10 until 12 noon, which also meets at the same time on the 9th, the 16th, the 23rd and the 30th. Pub Club is in session on Thursday the 2nd from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. and at the same times on Thursday the 16th. Note that the hub is closed on Friday the 3rd and the following Monday the 6th for Good Friday and Easter Monday. Knit, Stitch and Natter is the name of the game on Thursday the 9th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Thursday the 9th also features an Earth to Ear workshop from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. with Braille classes at the same times, which are by appointment only and also available on Thursday the 23rd. Friday the 10th sees the weaving group meeting from 10 until 12 noon, also happening on the 17th. Creative writing can be wrote on Friday the 10th from 1 until 3 p.m, leaving the weekend to prepare for quiz and cake from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. on Monday the 13th. Great Yarmouth Hub Games are being contested on Monday the 13th from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m, whilst the gentle exercise of bowling is on Tuesday the 14th from 12 noon until 3 p.m. A bit more energy might be required on Friday the 17th with tennis from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. But why not relax over the weekend and then enjoy burger and bingo on Monday the 20th from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. plus more food on Wednesday the 22nd as it's breakfast club from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Friday the 24th sees the Latch Hook group from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, followed by the audio book club from 1:30 until 3 p.m. And the last three events of the month are the pottery workshop from 10:30 until 1:30 on Monday the 27th, followed on Tuesday the 28th by a tea and tech drop-in from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, and finally an afternoon seafront walk from 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. For more information on any of the local activities, please contact the Great Yarmouth Vision Norfolk Hub on 01493 745 973, or you can email catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk, with Catherine spelt with a C and Vision Norfolk all one word.
Well, following on from my recent item about street names in the borough, I thought it would be interesting to learn more about the names of some of the ancient rows in Great Yarmouth. We're all familiar with the rows that still remain in the town, some of which have quite unusual names. But just to remind anybody, according to Charles Dickens, who visited Great Yarmouth, a row is a long, narrow lane or alley, quite straight, or as nearly as may be, with houses on each side, both of which you can sometimes touch at once with the fingertips of each hand by stretching out your arms to their full extent. Originally, there were around 145 rows, of which apparently 80 still remain. It isn't difficult to imagine the crowded and no doubt noisy conditions of life in these narrow thoroughfares. It's thought that the origins of the rows go back as far as the 11th century, when a community of fishermen first settled on the sandbanks. All the rows ran east to west off the three main streets in Great Yarmouth, which, in the 13th century, were Northgate, Middlegate and Southgate. The rows weren't numbered until 1804, but they all had names, many taken from notable residents of the town. Row 97 was Bailey's Row, after a surgeon, Joseph Bailey. Row 80 was named after a bailiff, Robert Hanmer. Another row was named after Lawyer Corey, a well-known attorney in the 1820s. What about Kittywich's Row, though? This row, number 95, was the narrowest, just 30 inches at one end. It may have been named after Kit Witchingham, a baker who lived there in the 17th century. But due to the row's narrowness and consequent lack of daylight, there are legends of witches and strange events there too. Row 6 had the macabre title of Body Snatchers Row. This row faced St Nicholas Minster, and in the 1820s a scientist named Thomas Vaughan lived in one of the houses in the row. His aim was to procure bodies for anatomical research, so he would keep a watch on the graveyard during the day, then, under cover of darkness, would go and dig up any new graves, remove the bodies, and send them in a crate to London on a goods horse and coach. Vaughan was paid a substantial amount for his work, around 10 to 12 guineas, the equivalent of £750 per body. He was eventually caught for his crimes, and ended up being sentenced to 7 years' transportation to present-day Tasmania. Other rows were named after tradespeople who lived in them. Some examples are Mac the Tinmaker's Row, Thornton the Grocer's Row, Davy the Watchmaker's Row, and Ellis the Brushmaker's Row. Then there were rows named after nearby pubs, such as St John's Head Row, Peacock Row, and New White Lion Row. Other names had seafaring connotations, such as Mariner's Compass Row and Globe Row. Some of the rows had two names, which must have been very confusing for people. Originally, some of the row houses were occupied by wealthy merchants, but gradually these people moved out into more spacious areas. Eventually, the buildings became tenements for numerous families who lived in insanitary conditions. Even before the Second World War, the rows had been condemned as slums, but many of them were destroyed in the intensive bombing raids of the war. As listeners will know, some of the ancient rows have been preserved, with signboards put up at some of the sites. It is fascinating to try to imagine what life must have been like for the residents of these narrow streets, who apparently could shake hands with their opposite neighbours by just standing at their open door.
That's very true, that, Alison. At the Maritime Museum, there's a lovely reconstruction of the rows, isn't there?
Yeah,
really
that's
good.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm sure I've heard that they all had an incline on them down to the river, so that
probably
the water or any other substances
would
flow down to the river.
Not very pleasant.
Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you. I think I can give you something maybe a little bit more genteel. I've got a lovely new book. This is by Susie Dent. Now, many of you know Susie as in Dictionary Corner on Countdown. And as well as being a presenter there, she's a very, very good author. A lexicographer is her official title. And she's chosen obscure words and one for every day of the year. So for March the 26th, and it's quite appropriate because it's sunny outside, but with a little bit of a chill in the air, this is the phrase blowing hot and cold. In the spring of 1484, at England's first ever press in the Almonry of Westminster Abbey, William Caxton printed the first translation of Aesop's fables. It was some 8 years before the discovery of America. Now, the identity of the Greek fabulist Aesop remains unclear, and there's no evidence of his writing, and yet century after century, fables were collected and credited to him. His stories bear the characteristic hallmark of animal behaviour that throws light upon the moral behaviour of men and women. For linguists, his legacy goes even further, for Aesop's work has given us enduring expressions like sour grapes. Pride comes before a fall. Quality, not quantity. The lion's share. And look before you leap. To blow hot and cold by continually changing one's mind is another coinage attributed to him. And it's born in the fable of the man and the satyr. In the story, a traveller who becomes hopelessly lost in a forest encounters a satyr. Now, a satyr was a mythic, goatish-type wood-dweller. This satyr offered him both lodging for the night and a passage to safety out of the woods in the morning. On the way to the satyr's home, the man blows on his hand. And the satyr asks why he does this, to which the man replies, "My breath warms my cold hands." On their arrival at his cottage, the two sit down to some steaming hot porridge. And the man blows on his first spoonful, and again the satyr asks him why. The man replies, "Well, the porridge is too hot to eat, and my breath will cool it," he answers. At this, the satyr orders him to leave, crying, "I can have nothing to do with a man who can blow hot and cold with the same breath."
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Desney and Gemma, so we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.